scalable singular chains like Solana are very successful has been that, like, you know, there's two approaches to scaling. There's going vertical, there's going horizontal. They both have validity, but ultimately you need horizontal scaling to reach like true mass scale. And so that will require many chains running in parallel. And we need to figure out how to make that user experience completely seamless. The internet runs at massive scale. It doesn't do it by running everything on one massive server. It does it by running many, many servers that can just seamlessly connect to each other. And we have to do that for blockchains. And so we have to figure out how to make different blockchains feel like one experience. With Unichain, a lot of our focus is on what we call interop, which is how to make multiple blockchains feel like one cohesive experience.
Welcome to Bankless, where we explore the frontier of internet money and internet finance. This is how to get started, how to get better, and how to front run the opportunity. This is David Hoffman here to talk to you about the launch of Unichain. Unichain, the Uniswap Labs built layer 2, is live today. On the show, we go through the release of Unichain with Hayden Adams, the creator of Uniswap and CEO of Uniswap Labs, to talk through some of the bells and whistles that the Uniswap layer 2 is bringing to the table. Some people out there, I'm sure, are saying something along the lines of, not another layer 2. Well, Unichain is bringing some novel tech to the table that no other layer 2 has. They have built some new kind of sequencing process that helps decentralize the sequencer in collaboration with Flashbots. They've been pioneering full-stack native interoperability with the Optimism Collective, and they've also built the Unichain Validation Network that allows Uni token holders to stake their Uni and check the validity of the output of the Unichain sequencer and also earn the fees accrued by the Unichain block space. I think that's pretty cool. And of course, these are the subjects that I get into with Hayden. But first, before we get into it, a message from our friends and sponsors over at Morpho. Morpho is a borrowing and lending application on Ethereum, also on Base. And it is also the first and only DeFi protocol that has been integrated into Coinbase.com, which is a pretty crazy concept. But if you're a longtime Bankless listener, you know that the concept is known as the DeFi mullet, fintech in the front, DeFi in the back. Coinbase is using Morpho to offer its users Bitcoin-backed loans, which actually is how I'm also personally using Morpho as well. It feels good to have an app that I am an ongoing customer of to support the podcast, so I appreciate you, Morpho. There is a link in the show notes if you just got peached by Morpho, so check them out. In addition to everything Unichain related, I also talk with Hayden plenty about Uniswap V4, which just got released last week. Uniswap V4 has this new singleton contract design, which means that the entire state of Uni V4 is contained inside of a single contract. This lowers inter-pool trading gas costs and new pool deployments down by 99.99%. That's four nines. As well as enables this idea called Uniswap hooks. And Hayden and I spend a bunch of time talking about the possibilities that Uniswap V4 hooks unlocks for the world. So let's get into it. But first, a message from our friends and sponsors, Uniswap. Let's go hear from them right now. Introducing Unichain. Built for DeFi and powered by Uniswap, Unichain is the fast, decentralized layer 2 designed to tackle blockchain speed and cost challenges. With this mainnet now live, you can enjoy transactions that are up to 95% cheaper than the ETH layer 1, all while benefiting from an impressive 1 second block time that will be getting even faster very soon. Unichain is the first layer 2 to launch as a stage 1 rollup on day 1. That means it comes with a fully functional permissionless proof system from the start, increasing transparency and further decentralizing the chain. More than 80 apps are joining the Unichain community, including Coinbase, Circle, Lido, Morpho, and Uniswap. You'll be able to bridge, swap, borrow, and lend, and launch new assets and more from day 1. Built by Uniswap Labs, the team behind the protocol that's processed over 2.75 trillion in all-time volume with zero hacks, Unichain truly enhances DeFi experiences with faster, cheaper, and seamless transactions, even across chains. And soon, the Unichain Validation Network will allow anyone to run a node and earn by securing the network. Visit uniswap.org and swap on Unichain today. Ondo Finance is leading the way in the tokenization of real-world assets, with a mission to accelerate the transition to an open economy by building the platforms, assets, and infrastructure that bring financial markets on-chain. With Ondo, institutions get seamless access to tokenized finance, while on-chain users gain access to institutional-grade real-world assets like never before. By bridging traditional finance and the blockchain economy, Ondo is unlocking liquidity, efficiency, and global access, reshaping markets for the digital age. As the leader in institutional adoption, Ondo Finance is the gateway to the trillion-dollar tokenization revolution. Institutional-grade finance, on-chain, for everyone. Zello is transitioning from a mobile-first, EVM-compatible Layer 1 blockchain to a high-performance Ethereum Layer 2, built on OP Stack with EigenDA and one-block finality. All happening soon with a hard fork. With over 600 million total transactions, 12 million weekly transactions, and 750,000 daily active users, Zello's meteoric rise would place it among one of the top Layer 2s, built for the real world and optimized for fast, low-cost global payments. As the home of the stablecoins, Zello hosts 13 native stablecoins across 7 different currencies, including native USDT on Opera MiniPay, and with over 4 million users in Africa alone. In November, stablecoin volumes hit $6.8 billion, made for seamless on-chain FX trading. Plus, users can pay gas with ERC-20 tokens like USDT and USDC and send crypto to phone numbers in seconds. But why should you care about Zello's transition to a Layer 2? Layer 2s unify Ethereum. L1s fragment it. By becoming a Layer 2, Zello leads the way for other EVM-compatible Layer 1s to follow. Follow Zello on X and witness the great Zello halvening, where Zello cuts its inflation in half as it enters its Layer 2 era and continuing its environmental leadership. Bankless Nation, I'm here with the creator of Uniswap, the founder of Uniswap Labs, and the man responsible for burning almost a quarter million of ETH, Hayden Adams. Welcome back to Bankless.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Hayden, Unichain is launching their OP Stack Layer 2, and I think it's one of the more uniquely constructed Layer 2s that I think everyone needs to understand and digest, including myself. So there is a new sequencing mechanism built with Flashbots. There is some of the fastest block times on the OP Stack, and from what you tell me, they are quickly going to become faster. There's also this brand new thing called the Unichain Validation Network to stake our Uni tokens. Hayden, first, congrats on the release. There's a lot to unpack. How should we start this conversation? Maybe just at the highest of levels, how would you summarize the significance of the release of Unichain upon the Layer 2 landscape and just broader Ethereum?
Awesome. And that's a great summary. What I would say is that, you know, we at Uniswap Labs, we built, you know, the Uniswap protocol, which is one of the, you know, it's the most used protocol in Ethereum, full stop. And then we also built the Uniswap web app and Uniswap wallet, which are some of the top, you know, user-facing products built on top of decentralized protocols and blockchains. And I think that has given us a very unique perspective and lens and approach. And, you know, going into building Unichain, you know, the thought was, how can we advance and accelerate the Ethereum space and the blockchain space to build better applications, you know, full stack? And, you know, so when we think about building products, we're now thinking not just at the front end level, but also at the back end level, also at the protocol, smart contract level, also at the chain level. And that allows us to really, you know, I think sometimes what a problem that our space has is people will build at a very narrow layer of the stack and they kind of offload their problems to a different part. And for us, because we're building, you know, at every layer of the stack, it gives us a very unique insight. And so when we started building Unichain, we were thinking, what does DeFi need to be, you know, to be better, to onboard more users, to create better user experiences, to create more efficient markets, et cetera? And so, you know, with Unichain, we're leaning very hard into, you know, faster block times. People want transactions to happen very quickly. And, you know, 12 seconds on L1 isn't cutting it. Honestly, even 2 seconds at the L2 level isn't really cutting it. You need really fast blocks. And so for Unichain at launch, we'll be the fastest OP stack chain with 1 second block times. But then, you know, later in the year, in the coming months, we're going to be working towards 250 millisecond sub blocks. Another problem for DeFi is MEV and the amount of value that gets lost by users to MEV. And, you know, just for example, Uniswap users end up missing out on about $1 billion per year based on MEV. And, you know, we think that
that's
how
you ended up burning so much ETH.
Yes. And, you know, as much as we like burning ETH, we actually also like returning value to our users even more. Sorry, ETH people. No, I am also an ETH person, but still. And we really do build with users, end users in mind. And I think that ultimately what's better for end users will be what's better for Ethereum, for what it's worth. And so, you know, some of this sequencing stuff that you talked about at the builder layer that we're partnering with Flashbots on really will allow us to rebate MEV, or allow us to, you know, allow not just us, but other DeFi developers and even like, you know, et cetera, to have MEV be returned to users. And that both works for Uniswap liquidity providers, it works for swappers, et cetera. And then, you know, I think that the final thing I want to get at here is really interop. And the you know, when I look at our products today, the user experience of L2s has become very fragmented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of what even, you know, has made like very scalable, you know, scalable singular chains like Solana very successful has been that you have one chain that can process a lot of transactions. And I think that, you know, in my mind, there's, you know, there's two approaches to scaling. There's going vertical, there's going horizontal. They both have validity, but ultimately you need horizontal scaling to reach like true mass scale. And so that will require many chains running in parallel. And we need to figure out how to make that user experience completely seamless. When I look at what's like truly possible there, you just can look at the internet, right? The internet runs at massive scale. It doesn't do it by running everything on one massive server. It does it by running many, many servers that can just seamlessly connect to each other. And we have to do that for blockchains. And so we have to figure out how to make, you know, different blockchains feel like one experience. And so with Unichain, a lot of our focus is on what we call interop, which is how to, you know, make multiple blockchains feel like one cohesive experience. And there's multiple approaches that we're taking, and we have to layer them all in the same way that the internet has multiple ways to feel seamless. And one of them is native interop through the through Optimism Superchain, which might be the, you know, the fastest, cheapest version of interop, the most seamless, the one that makes you feel like liquidity is essentially fungible between the two chains. And then on top of that, we also have what we call intent-based interop, which is essentially using markets and trading to kind of quickly convert assets across chains using various bridging systems and liquidity systems. And so we're working on both of those for Unichain. And the end result that we hope to build is a really, you know, amazing, really just like an amazing platform on which you can build amazing products.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in this release and this like tech release, I think there's something here for everyone. So if you are a person who is concerned about the centralization of layer twos because of centralized sequencers, well, that is the part of the conversation that's going to interest this person is this Flashbots block building mechanism that we're going to talk about, the part which is going to be like the execution of the layer two.
And the Unichain Validation Network.
And the Unichain Validation Network.
We have two things we're doing here.
Okay. If you are an Ethereum person who is worried about layer two fragmentation, there's a conversation here when it comes to native interop, which is some of the rigor that you guys at Uniswap Labs have been putting into creating this like full stack native interop mechanism that's coming to the superchain. So we're going to talk about that. And maybe if you're just like a Uni token holder, and maybe there's something here for you, because now with the Unichain Validation Network, we're going to be able to stake our Uni. And so I think this is kind of downstream of what you were talking about with your position at Uniswap Labs, where because you guys are building end-to-end on the stack from an application on the layer one, you guys have a wallet, you guys are a full stack company, and it gives you a unique perspective to innovate at different parts of the stack and kind of create a full stack solution. So I'm pretty excited for this episode. Before we dive into each one of those areas in detail and specific, I also want to touch on Uniswap V4, because Uni V4 just got released not too long ago, last week, and many, many people are talking about that. And so I think some listeners are probably coming into this episode saying, oh, Hayden on Bankless, clearly they're talking about Uniswap V4. We're actually going to be talking about Unichain, but I do want to talk about Uniswap V4. How do these two releases relate to each other? Is this a coincidence that they're happening within like a week of each other? These two different announcements, how do these things fit together?
It's like both a coincidence and not. I think, like, you know, we've been grinding on both for a pretty long time. These are, you know, these are the two biggest projects we've done. And we did ship them both within a 2-week period of time, which is kind of insane. That was partially a coincidence, but actually in some ways the timing is really nice because there's kind of like, it's a good moment for like new ecosystems to form. By the way, we forgot there's something for everyone. Like swappers and liquidity providers will also greatly benefit from both of these releases. And that's part of where I can even talk about this convergence. So Uniswap V4 launched. Uniswap V4 is the latest and greatest edition of the Uniswap protocol. There were really two areas of focus. One was around, you know, cost, gas efficiency, et cetera. And the other was around what we call hooks. So cost, really simple. You know, we have a bunch of improvements to the efficiency of using the protocol. And so that means deploying pools are like 99.9% cheaper. And we're doing that with our new, you know, single contract architecture. And you know, that actually does make a big difference, right? There's thousands of pools being created. And sometimes people think, well, pool creation, that can be expensive. On mainnet today, it's gone from $55 down to $4, something like that.
Uniswap V4 has brought pool creation from $55 down to $4.
Something like that. At reasonably high gas prices that I tested yesterday.
Right.
But on L2s, obviously, gets even lower, and it maybe is in a matter of like cents or less than cents, like fractions of cents. Mm-hmm. And so pool creation, much cheaper, which is really nice. We also have just, in the early days, we used wrapped ETH under the hood, but that adds an additional cost. And so we have native ETH support. It all boils down to like swapping is maybe 15% less gas cost for when you're swapping against ETH. We also have, because all the tokens live in a single contract, when you do like these more complex split routes and multi-hop routes, mm-hmm. There's a compounding benefit to the more of those pools that are in V4. Because essentially, you know, before you used to like need to transfer tokens between pools and these like multi-frac, you know, and each of those transfers incurred a cost. For V4, you put in the input token, you could have like a complex series of routes and hops that are just all like internal accounting rather than real token transfers. And then you spit out a token on the other end. And, you know, that ends up being just like a much more efficient way to do multi-hop routing. And, you know, And then gas, just like across the board, gas is cheaper. And I think that it will compound the more liquidity moves into V4. And we're even seeing very early on that Uniswap V4 is getting, you know, the majority of small swaps through our UI. Even the liquidity is a tiny fragment, right? Because it just launched. And so liquidity hasn't had full time to build up. But even at much lower liquidity for small trades, the gas savings outweigh the, you know, the increased amount of liquidity. And so V4 is already performing very well there. So that's like the one half of V4. The other half of V4 is what we call hooks. And hooks are really, you know, turning the Uniswap protocol into a developer platform. And the Uniswap protocol was always a developer platform. People could always build things on top of it. But there were very strict limits on how you could modify your pools, right? The pools, you couldn't really modify your pools. There was a single implementation of you know, concentrated liquidity, et cetera. And then a single implementation of how fees could be done. And then any modifications had to be done like externally or through the token contract itself. With Uniswap V4, people can really modify. We allow people to somewhat arbitrarily modify the logic of pools, but in a way that creates, you know, very like consistent standard, you know, like a very consistent experience and gets to benefit from this like low efficient routing against everything else within Uniswap. And so from that, we've already seen even day one, like I didn't even know about this project, but like the highest trading volume or the most assets for Uniswap V4 on day one actually came through a third party hook project that launched at the same time as us called Flaunch, which, you know, people were trading. It's essentially, you know, the equivalent. It's like a system that uses hooks to more fairly distribute, you know, like to more fairly issue new tokens, yeah. Kind of similar to like...
It's a token launch pad.
Yeah, it's like a token launch platform, but that like natively integrates with Uniswap V4 hooks.
Yeah.
And we saw like a lot of activity there. Day one, I didn't even, you know...
I was someone
about
activity.
Yeah. And so like, you know, that's sort of like a teaser of what is possible with Uniswap uh-huh. V4, but it goes like well beyond that, right? There's, yeah. There's, you know, yes, it's good for token launching, but it's also good for, you know, creating, you know, for all sorts of like special designs for different and new asset classes. It's good for... Honestly, just improving and optimizing Uniswap fees. And maybe since you asked about the convergence of V4 and Unichain, I think this is a good, I can give like a really good example here. The builder that we're working on with Flashblocks will enable is essentially it will create very fair priority ordered blocks. And we can use that. And by we, I mean really anyone with building on Uniswap protocol or on Unichain. But, you know, one way to use that would be like you could have a hook in a Uniswap pool that actually sets LP fees as a function of the priority fee for that swap. And what that would do is actually allow LP fees to be aware of how much MEV they're creating, because the more MEV a transaction is generating, the higher priority fees someone will bid for that, to trade against it. And so LPs can actually now be aware of what is being bid, and they can actually up the LP fee proportionally and ultimately capture more of the value that they're creating as liquidity providers and leak less value to MEV. And so this is like an example of like a really beautiful convergence between Unichain and Uniswap V4. But like that's just like one idea, right? And like the kind of the world's your oyster there. And so I think that I'm just really excited that they're like both, you know, one other thing here is just that like when it comes to like interrupting and when it comes to like the kind of explosion of L2s and chains, I think that like a lot of hook developers might not want to be maintaining their infra across like 50 different L2s. And so, you know, I think that Unichain could become, in part because it's like designed to, you know, with DeFi in mind, can become like a really good kind of hub for like people that want to deploy hooks and experiment with without trying to like manage across a million different chains at the same time. And so I expect like a really exciting, vibrant developer community to form, building on top of both Uniswap V4 and Unichain. And I expect these like compounding benefits of the two.
I think that maybe gets us into the interop conversation. I understand the desire for like many people to just not want to manage multiple deployments of their applications. And so like at the very least, use Unichain as like a shelling point of where to deploy your hook and manage your hook. Like if you're just going to do it in just one spot, just do it, you know, at the epicenter, which is going to be Unichain. And honestly, that's probably if liquidity does end up going to Unichain, then like that's where you want to be anyways. I've heard Uniswap V4 hooks being called smart contracts for liquidity, which I think is a good meme. And so, but I think the truth of that is like the truth of will Unichain be the epicenter of hooks and the developer experience? And honestly, the liquidity center of the layer 2 landscape is going to depend on that native interop conversation. So maybe we can start with that native interop conversation, because if things can be deployed on Unichain and also be natively interoperable with other layer twos, that is a really strong argument for Unichain representing kind of the epicenter of liquidity in layer two, in the layer two landscape. So maybe you can talk about how, what this native interop looks like with the Unichain, how it works, what it'll feel like for users. Just open up that conversation for us.
Yeah. And I just maybe want to contextualize, like for what it's worth, by the way, Uniswap V4 at day one was deployed to pretty much all the L2s. And so we're not like, this doesn't represent Uniswap like moving away from supporting other chains and only supporting its own, right? Mm-hmm. This is like us trying to spearhead pushing forward innovation in the space and creating what we think is a very unique platform within it. So Uniswap still, you know, day one on Base, on Arbitrum, on Polygon, et cetera. And I believe that there will be very vibrant ecosystems there. And you have things like, you know, well, if you want to write a smart contract in Rust, on a hook in Rust, then you might want to be using Arbitrum, right? And so just want to like contextualize that a little bit. But then when I talk about, you know, interop, I think one thing I want to bring into the conversation, I have this sort of metaphor I've been using recently, which is, I think an interesting conversation to have is what applications should co-locate within the same blockchain as like the leading liquidity protocol. Because I think that's not a thing people think about and maybe sounds kind of complex. But what I'm essentially saying here is we're in this kind of system right now where we have a bunch of general purpose L2 ecosystems that are competing against each other. And the majority of activity in blockchains today is trading. And because of that, everyone wants to be the best place. Every general purpose chain wants to have the most liquidity to be like a trading hub. But I think something that like a point that is getting lost here that I really want to emphasize is that, you know, co-locating your application when it comes to like engineering and like blockchain architecture, like co-locating your application with a blockchain is like living with an AMM is like kind of like living with a hoarder sometimes. And what I mean by that is that like, what does a payments network want? A payments network actually wants like the lowest fees possible and very reliable, very low fees. What is like a big, you know, a game like running on a blockchain want? They want low fees and very reliable fees. What does an AMM do? An AMM actually like basically incentivizes an insane amount of trading because, you know, if there's ever an arbitrage available on the AMM, someone will make a trade up to that value. And so AMMs almost set like a floor on the block, on like the gas cost of interacting. And so like of using that block space. And so, you know, I think that like you might, you know, maybe you want to like, you know, live next to the hoarder instead of with the hoarder, right? But like to do that, you need to be able to like, maybe they have a lot of stuff and you actually want some of their stuff, or you want to be able to engage in commerce with said hoarder. Like, mm-hmm. You know, so I think that like really what we need to move towards is a model where liquidity kind of sits like in its own sovereign block space, and then people and then like applications that need very low fees actually sit in right next to them and interop against them. And so like, you know, you have a payments network, but when it needs to convert between assets, you know, those assets get popped into Unichain, they get swapped and they get popped out, because that is how you have low reliable fees. Because, you know, anytime there's like a huge amount of market volatility, demand for trading within an AMM is going to increase, and that will spike gas fees. And that's actually what happens to Ethereum. Every time Ethereum has like a gas fee spike, It's usually like the launch of a new token that people want to buy, or like a big market movement that like creates a big market movement that creates, you know, a lot of demand for trading. And, you know, and that actually affects like small applications that shouldn't really be affected by those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like some things certainly should co-locate with liquidity. And I think that's like going to be a very interesting thing to figure out. Like, do perps belong co-locating with liquidity? Does lending, you know, these are different interesting conversations to be had. But I think that, like, and then the last thing I'll say is that, like, even like the logic for how the chain like orders transactions might be very different for a payments network versus a trading platform, right? And so, like, you know, when we're thinking about Unichain and like the builder that we're building and the sequencing logic and all of that, we're thinking like what is optimal for DeFi and as well as trading, and that might not be the same for like a game, for like other use cases. And so, like, this priority ordering is actually allows us to create really fair, you know, really user, you know, really fair transaction ordering that is really good for users. And so for who are swapping, that might not be the perfect logic for another use case. And so I think that's like kind of the like positioning of it within the world. There are like some context in terms of like what it actually feels and looks like. Day one, it's going to look like another chain because these pieces are being rolled out step by step, right? We don't have full interop day one. We are working to, you know, we're launching the chain and now we're working on it, you know, on interop, right? And so, you know, day one, it will look like kind of like any other chain, with the caveat that, you know, it will be 1 second block times, which is, you know, faster than all the other OP-Stack chains today. And, you know, maybe we have some like, you know, and that's kind of like, you know, we also will have, you know, it has native USDC. We have a lot of partners we've been working with who, and, you know, us and the Uniswap Foundation have been working with, who will be also, you know, launching cool things on Unichain day one, or building their, bringing their products, stuff like Circle, bringing native USDC. So they'll certainly like be like an initial ecosystem, but I think that I expect very early on a lot of new projects to start deploying and doing cool things with it.
Mm-hmm. I think each tech stack, layer two tech stack, like the OP stack, Arbitrum Orbitz, ZK chains, they're all trying to work on internal interoperability, native interoperability inside of their tech stack. And I think the market, myself, users are all kind of just waiting to be able to experience that. And to my understanding, this native interop part of the Unichain is being worked in collaboration with the Optimism Collective. Can you shed a little bit more light on that? And say we do get to a day where this native interop is live and can be experienced by users. How does this kind of work under the hood, and what does this mean for the Optimism Superchain, and how is this really built collectively?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will also add that like there's like interop within ecosystems that are somewhat competing with each other, mm-hmm. but then there's interop between them, and right. I think both of those are important. And I think that like, but to just start with like native interop, and you know. Like the, you know, Optimism calls it the super chain, Arbitrum mm-hmm. calls them chain clusters. But the idea here is, you know, I think with like native interop, the goal is really to almost have like assets feel fungible between the two chains. Right. Like in our UI, you know, I think we failed if we can't show the token balances. Not, and again, there's like day one and there's like day like 90 and then there's day like one. Like this will be a process to get there, right? We mm-hmm. have to like iterate through the UX flows. We have to iterate through the like, you know, the sequencing design, et cetera, right? But to me, we have failed if we show you two different versions of ETH in our right. UI.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, it means that, like, you don't have different representations of assets within user experiences. So you have, like, and to me, it means that, like, even if you're transacting, if you're buying a token, like, if you're on Unichain and you buy a token on OP mainnet or something, or base, when they join interop, or if when they join interop, which I assume they are, I'm just saying I can't speak on behalf of another team, but it shouldn't take that much longer to, like, I should be able to buy a token from on OP mainnet from Unichain within a second, right? Mm-hmm. It might not, well, the question will be remained if we can do it at the 250 millisecond flashbox level, but really, like, you should be able to buy a token on another chain that you should be able to view the balances as combined. It should take, you know, like less than a second, and it should cost, you know, a very, you know, almost, you know, it shouldn't cost much more than converting assets within a single chain. So it's really just like fast, cheap, good user experience. You know, you shouldn't really have, like, we should be able to, once you have a super chain, you should be able to start abstracting the chains, and you shouldn't feel like there are multiple chains. It should feel like one chain, but it's now running at a much greater scale than any individual chain. And
okay, so but what is the, how would you actually like illustrate the technical solution here? So when Unichain goes live, it's part of the Optimism Collective, there's going to be, we're working towards native interop. It is a process, but is it like, how do you actually illustrate the technological advances here to getting to like this native interop?
Yeah. So there's like technical backend advances, and, you know, that gets at, like, you know, if you're running a sequencer for one chain, you probably want to also be running a sequencer for the other chain, or like mm-hmm. you want to be running a node for the other chain, so that you know that, you know, you're also up to date on the state of the other chain. You want to, like, you know, so you want the, like, some level of, like, you know, communication there. I think the other thing that you really want is like a semi, like a, like basically like to really have like it feel fungible, you want like a shared security model between the two, because and you can layer additional security models, but you want like the base level security model to be like shared so that you, you know, because if the security model isn't shared, then it's hard to treat two assets as fungible because they have fundamentally with a different security model, they should have a different market price to some degree, right? And it's not, and so, you know, it's about like sharing a security model with like shared bridge logic, and it's about sharing, you know, standard protocols for how sequencing works and for how, you know, proving works, et cetera. And then it's about, you know, sequencers that validate other chains, and kind of it all comes together. And I you know, I think you guys could do entire, I'm sure that like when Interop launches, we can do like a whole one, maybe we bring Carl back on, et cetera. And we like go really deep on the technicals there. But then at that's like the level there. And then there's like the UI level, which is how do we present these things to users?
Right.
And I actually think that's even more important. Like, I think that we could do a version of this UX today where chains are abstracted, but it would just feel bad. And the difference is that it would feel like we could have no chain selector and we could show a combined balance of all your ETH balances. But then when you convert behind the hoods, we would have to do like a whole series of very slow interactions that would take a very long time. Right. And so like swapping ETH might randomly take 20 minutes instead of 12 seconds because to like properly bridge from one chain to the other to make the swap, like it's too slow. And whereas within the superchain, we will, you know every different chain can be bridged in and out of from every other chain very quickly, so we can create a cohesive, fast user experience, and it will be cheap too. So I think that like you can build these UXs today, and I think to some degree what we're doing now in preparation for this is starting to think about that at the UI level, even before the superchain stuff is, or the Interop stuff is like fully ready to integrate at the UI level. That, you know, that's coming soon. But, you know, yeah, to really have it feel good, you need very fast, very cheap bridging, essentially.
Right. The Arbitrum portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge, and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. With over $1.5 billion in TVL, the METH protocol is home to METH, the fourth largest ETH liquid staking token, offering one of the highest APRs among the top 10 LSTs. And now, CMETH takes things even further. This restaked version captures multiple yields across Kerak, Eigenlayer, Symbiotic, and many more, making CMETH the most efficient and most composable LRT solution on the market. Metamorphosis Season 1 dropped $7.7 million in Cook rewards to METH holders. Season 2 is currently ongoing, allowing users to earn staking, restaking, and AVS yields, plus rewards in Cook, METH Protocol's governance token, and more. Don't miss out on the opportunity to stake, restake, and shape the future of METH Protocol with Cook. Participate today at meth.mantle.xyz.
Okay, the way I understand chain abstraction is like you approach it from two angles. One is like the top-down user interface level, and it just rounds out the tech under the hood, like all tech does, right? This is just like what the personal computer did and what Apple did when it made just a usable computer interface. It abstracted away a bunch of the choices and complexity. And that's coming from the user interface level. But then also we need to have like tech advances. We need to have fast block times. We actually need the assets to transfer over blockchains very quickly so that the UX can easily show and make choices that help things abstract. So like you have the top down and meets the bottom up. These two things touch they meet together, and that's where we get chain abstraction. But whose responsibility is it to actually like deliver the bottom up tech advances? Is this what you guys are building at Unichain? Is this in the Optimism collectives? Because I'm just trying to get a sense of, we have in the Unichain announcement like some excitement about native interop. I'm just kind of trying to figure out where this innate interop is coming. It sounds like it's not one technological advancement. It's coming from a variety of different places. And so there's not actually one clear like deliverable here. Like I'm trying to get a sense of that.
Well, I mean, a lot of the heavy, there is like a lot of heavy lifting being done by the OP Collective, right? Part of what we were excited about joining the Superchain is that we can like work with them and collaborate. So I think that it is a collaboration kind of on both sides. Like, like the bottoms up part is a collaboration and the top down is a collaboration with, I'd say that like, yeah, maybe we're doing a little bit more of the heavy lifting on the UI side, but we're going to have to be working with them closely. And we're going to, and then, yeah, they're doing more of the heavy lifting on like the, you know, development of interop technology. But we're like, we have to still like make the sequences, you know, like we still have to run it and we have to work with them on it and make sure that it, and like, there's also like, when it comes to like the thinking of how it like feels across the stack and the interfaces between them, that's like also an area that I think we can like have some very unique input into. And so it's a collaboration, as the best things in crypto are, in my opinion.
Is there any sort of like timeline on like expected arrival of a seamless cross-chain inside of the Superchain experience?
I mean, look, I would say that like, I don't know what I can't say. I don't think that we're going to be waiting that long here to have pieces of it start to roll out. I think that like, you know, I don't know, like again, like there's like, to me, like also even my own definition of seamless is like a really high bar. And so like, but I think that like the cool thing is there's a lot of wins along the way. Like it's going to get better and better and better throughout the year is how I would put it. And so like, I think that like, you know, every couple of months we should have like meaningful improvements to you know, the experience of using L2s, in my opinion.
So there's never going to be one single announcement of like, congratulations, layer 2 interop is here. It's just going to be, we chip away at some of the frustrations, some of the UX.
People start
failures.
To be like, oh, wow, using the Uniswap web app feels better than it used to feel. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just going to be like, there will certainly be a day where we're like, the first version of interoping L2s is here. Like, that will be here. Mm-hmm. There will be big announcements, but like, it will, you know, part of it will just be chipping away at it. And definitely like a goal for me is by the end of the year, like it should be like completely seamless. And, you know, there will be a lot of steps to getting it more seamless along the way. And so, you know, I hope that, I think some of them will be realized, you know, in the near term. Some of them have already been realized. Like we've already been preparing for this, right? We already, you know, worked to make L2s first class citizens and have like all our dropdowns be multi-network. Like in the past, we used to silo our interface between networks, you know, to switch between the network at like the top of the page. And now, so like we've already been preparing for this. We've already been like abstracting away different parts. We already integrated bridging as like a step towards there. By the way, I'll also mention, like, I do want to shout out, like, beyond native interop, there's like intents-based interop, which I think is a very important part of the story. It's, you know, part of how we'll be able to interop against other ecosystems,
right,
beyond
that's
the Superchain.
Like Arbitrum and Optimism clusters.
Abstracted. And it might even also be a way to like go from 1 second interop to 250 millisecond interop within the Superchain. Like, I don't know, but I have intuitions there, but that we haven't explored in full depth yet. But I'd say that, like, you know, the way I think about that one is just you can use, you know, intense, like people can use arbitrary bridging mechanisms and arbitrary liquidity providers to convert between chains, right? You just need a bridge or a liquidity provider to you know, be willing to sell you one asset on one chain for the asset you have in the other chain. And you can use these markets as like an abstraction layer for all possible bridging systems, including native interop. And that will be part of the story. And getting better at that, and that gets at, like, you asked a bit, like, I think that we should have a convert, like, I don't think that we need, like, I worry a little bit about too many, like, I think that the same way that, like, computing has kind of converged towards, like, we have maybe, like, Linux, and we have Mac, and we have Windows, but we don't have, like, 80 of them.
Right.
Because it's too complex technology. Like, having, like, applications have to support, like, and when people build an application, they'll often make it work on Mac and Windows, but they're not going to make it, and Linux even, but they're not going to make it, like, work on, like, 80 different things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, like, there will be eventually a convergence of tech stacks. And so we probably only need to have, like, cross, like, so, like, when people worry about, like, oh, how will interop ever work, or it needs, like, I think that, like, you know, who knows, maybe it's Arbitrum and Optimism, maybe it's a ZK chain, like, you know, maybe there's, like, I don't know how it converges exactly here,
right?
But I'd say that, like, you know, having all of these tools in our belt such that we can create cohesive, like, I think at the end of the day, like, you know, 2 years from now, when I think about what our product looks and feels like, I think if you can't, like, an asset shouldn't really appear in our UI if it, you know, can't be converted for every other asset in the UI in like at a low cost for, you know, relatively quickly, right? Otherwise, like, we're just creating bad user experiences for people. And so I think that, like, these interop systems will be what gets us there. And yeah.
Cool. Let's turn from interrupt to execution, which will invoke flashbots. So maybe you can illustrate a little bit about what is different with unichain block execution and block building, how flashbots got involved here. My understanding is that there's this flashbots puts this TEE in front of the unichain sequencer to enforce some additional rules, which kind of checks the power of the sequencer, makes the centralization of a sequencer just less important, and does some other cool mechanisms. Can you open up this conversation for us?
Yeah, and we have two approaches here, and they actually both in some ways solve multiple problems at once. But I'd say that, you know, we have the builder, that we're working on in partnership with Flashbots, and then we have the unichain validation network. And I think it's good to talk about them both. And they both in different ways provide checks and balances and additional decentralization on top of the sequencer. And then the Flashbots builder also provides additional capabilities when it comes to the fairness of transaction ordering, when it comes to ways of returning MEV to users and stuff like that. To start with the Flashbots system, we're essentially, you know, it's not too dissimilar to people who've heard of like proposer builder separation in Ethereum. But really what it is that before transactions are fed into the sequencer, they're fed into this other system first. And it is what we call a block builder. And, you know, this block builder is running inside what are called TEEs, or trusted execution environments. Essentially what it is it's like at the hardware, like it's people, there's chips, and at the hardware level, they have like certain rules for how they operate. And it allows you to create, it's kind of like a blockchain for a server. Like in the same way, like blockchains kind of, you have sort of guarantees for what will execute with like certain trust assumptions, et cetera. And I think TEEs allow you to create like applications that have, you know, specific rules imposed on them. They allow you to create essentially servers that have certain rules imposed on them. When people talk about, you know, sequencers, there's a few different things that they talk about. One is like the sequencer could take the MEV if they wanted. And, you know, today, like most sequencers don't take too much MEV, or they do some, but like, you know, you're sort of relying on goodwill for them not to be doing like the most malicious forms of extracting MEV, which would be like sandwich attacks, et cetera. But, you know, what we want to do with this builder is we want to say, well, by running some of the builder logic inside a TEE, we can actually have stronger guarantees around how transactions are being ordered, such that the sequencer is not able to like arbitrarily, you know, extract the MEV. And then, and what that actually also does is it allows you to, you know, essentially what we're doing is we're going to be ordering transactions according to priority fee, and so everything that's fed into the TE within a period of time will get, you know, ordered fairly, according to this, like, yeah, very transparent rules, right? The transparent rule is the higher the priority fee paid, the higher up in the block it will be.
And so that next brings us back to this like 2016, 2017 era of Ethereum layer one, where no one had really discovered MEV because there wasn't too much MEV on the Ethereum layer one back then in the first place. And so like it was very simple of how to get your transaction included. You just paid a higher priority fee than all of your peers. And if you did, then you got included. And if you didn't, then you didn't get included. And there was no other games to be played. There was no MEV extraction. There was no transaction reordering. It kind of feels like using the power of a TEE and pushing everything through that TEE, all the transactions, we're kind of returning to just a very simple, reductive, kind of like naive way of ordering transactions, which is good. Just if you want to go first, you pay more. And if you don't want to go first, you pay less.
Yeah. And I think that like, back in the day, there were issues with that on Ethereum because we didn't have like very, like people barely knew what MEV was, right? And there weren't very many rules imposed on how transactions. So part of it is about like using the TEs to impose like rules that create, you know, better outcomes, but also exposing those to smart contracts running on the chain allow you to do all sorts of very cool things, right? By like one thing that like, you know, could happen is like you can have like transactions that are not like, you know, if you have like a side channel deal between the builder and the like swapper, like, or the arbitrage, like you might be able to like, you know, like pay your priority fee outside of the system, right? And so part of the purpose of having a priority fee is to make sure that like, you know, you can use TEEs to have like certain like rules around privacy and stuff, so that in order to participate in the system, you have to kind of pay the fee, right? And so within the system. And so that allows you to like do things at the smart contract level that is aware of that system. And what I mean by that is like, you can construct, for a liquidity provider pool, like using Hux, LPs could set their own fees proportional to the priority fee, which is visible on chain for that transaction, which means that liquidity providers can now be aware of the MEV of the swaps through the chain. Now, there's different levels of like enforcement of the TE builder. Like when we initially roll it out, it's kind of like a layer on top of the sequencer. It's possible over time, like as it proves out its robustness and as we iterate on it and as we roll it out, like it could be like, you could eventually, for example, enforce it in the fault proof. You could say, this block is not valid unless the builder has signed off on it. And then the builder will only, you know, in the TE will verify that like, you know, we'll only sign off if it's run this logic. And so you can have like these additional layers of enforcement on top of it. And part of that isn't just about proving out the initial version. Two other things on the TE builder that are going to be possible is going from 1 second blocks down to 250 millisecond blocks. And that is, you know, again, possible because some of the like the thing that takes time to build blocks, for example, is like things like merkleizing the state. And you don't need to commit. And so the TE builder can like commit to the state for a period of time while merkleizing in parallel. And so like what we have is these like 250 millisecond increments that are like can be generated faster than you can generate a full block. And each of them feels like a block from like a, you know, from the perspective of swappers, from the perspective of like, you know, MEV and block build, right? It feels like 250 milliseconds, but then like they go, those get like combined into 1 second blocks that get posted by the sequencer. Mm. And so you have, you know, so that's another thing that's made possible by the TEs. The last thing I'll say is that, you know, we're planning on adding basically revert protection, which means that if your transaction fails, you don't have to pay gas fees, which is another nice thing that we're going to have.
But it does cost resources to revert a transaction. So is that just...
But it doesn't require... Yeah, so at the builder level, I think that, you know, that like the builder will have to like, you know... And I think that there's going to be like... We're going to see how well it works. I'm excited for it. I think we can do it. But yeah, I think that like it's... The cool thing is that the builder is running like off-chain, right? It's not... And so you can, you know... Like you just have to do like, you know, sophisticated techniques for handling that. But again, I think that like, you know, that's another thing that we can start to, you know, that we're going to be experimenting with at the builder level is revert protection and having, you know, people not pay fees for failed transactions.
Check my understanding on this. There is no public mempool for the Uni chain. And so when we talk about MEV on the Uni chain, the only knowledge that like an MEV bot or, you know, a wannabe MEV extractor would be able to have about the state of MEV is from the public state of Unichain, which is like free, open, totally publicly accessible information. And the only way to extract that MEV is to not be able to be playing in the mempool because there is no mempool, but instead just like reviewing the state of the chain and trying to get an arbitrage transaction in by paying a higher gas fee. And so there's no like co-location shenanigans. There's no trying to read... like get transaction order flow ahead of others. It seems to be like this mechanism from Flashbots with this TEE really just reduces the number of games that can be played in private spheres and allows just like one larger, bigger game to happen that's downstream of the public state of the Uni chain. Does that check out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's still kind of like the equivalent of a mempool in some ways that like that the builder is reading from. Okay. But then the sequencer is only reading from the builder. So like, I think of it as like the sequencer isn't reading from public mempool. There's a place that transactions are posted that the builder reads from and then constructs blocks. And then the sequencer pretty much just reads from the builder. I say that like when it comes to like these types of games, like eliminating them completely in all contexts is really challenging, right? Like,
right.
Like you can still like, sure. Can you still communicate faster with the builder if your server is closer? Maybe. And maybe the only solution to that is you have to have like geographically distributed multiple pieces of the builder that somehow are reconciled with each other. Like, sure, you can like eventually, you know, like it's not a, like eliminating all games is impossible, but the goal here is to like massively reduce the impact of this on users. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that like I'm very confident we can do is massively reduce the amount of value that is extracted from end users by sophisticated, you know, searchers and arbitragers and professional market, right? And you know, they all these parties still play a role in this world, but like, let's try to return as much value to users right. that create it as possible. And so I'm not going to come up here and claim that we've eliminated, you know, all forms of games that could be played because that's like maybe impossible and maybe, yeah. And it also actually might not be optimal, which is kind of an interesting thing. Like games, like they're like incentives to participate in systems can provide net value. And there's some value, like there's value that people like arbitragers provide to the world. And so like, I think it's okay for them to make some money, but it's really about like today, I think Uniswap users are like not getting as good of a deal as they could be. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to like, you know, improve on that significantly.
Is there a timeline from when Unichain one block times go down to 250 millisecond subblocks?
I don't know if I can give you a date right now, but I think, again, it's like very actively in development. We have like an internal testnet of this right now. And it's about, you know, and then, you know, next step would be an external testnet and then a public launch of it. And I think it's all about just like, you know, making sure that like when we launch these things, we want them to be like, you know, we want to minimize, like, you know, we don't want sequencing downtime. We don't want, like, we want things to run it. You know, we want them to be able to be well tested and run at scale. So like, I don't have an exact date for you at this moment, but like, all of these things are
being, Q3.
You know, sure, like somewhere in that area. I'm just saying, you know.
So before Q4.
You know, not committing to any date, but I say that like, I'm very excited. I'm very optimistic about a lot of these pieces, shipping throughout the year, not like at the end of the year. Like, you know, across things like Interop, across Slashblocks, across the Chain Validation Network. Like, we're not working as if we have like years to figure this stuff out. Let's put it that way.
Okay, let's turn to the last piece of the puzzle, the Uniswap Validation Network. What is this? Because this is something that I don't think there is a parallel of for other layer twos, to my knowledge. So what is this? What is the Uniswap Validation Network? And what does it do?
Yeah, I think Unichain Validation Network is kind of like another layer of validation and check and balance on the sequencer. You know, a lot of people kind of talked about like, we should decentralize a sequencer, and then like, but it's like the most hand wave thing of all time, and no one has a plan for how to do it. Yeah. And I'd say that like, our way of doing it is just like adding additional checks and balances iteratively and incrementally. And if they prove to be really good, building on top of them until we have a point where like, we don't have a sequencer that has much power at all. And I'd say even at launch, they're like, or not like even like, you know, and there's already checks and balances built into the OP stack, right? We already have like forced inclusion. We already have, you know, the stage one fault proofs, right? We have things that are beginning to be checks and balances. We have the fact that anyone can run a node and validate and detect bad behavior. But what the Unichain Validation Network is essentially is just like, you know, you can, you know, you stake Uni, you run nodes, right? You run Unichain nodes. So part of it is just like an incent. You know, it's a good, you know, you earn a portion of fees from Unichain as part of that. So part of it is just like incentivizing more people to like be validating the network, which is on its own a good thing. You know, people are signing off on, you know, people will be able to like sign off on the validity of blocks. And when it comes to like, settlement, there's no like, there's actually multiple layers of settlement on every system, right? Even on Ethereum L1, you post it, there's like the settlement of when like, maybe like you're using like a builder and they say they're going to include it. Then there's like the settlement if it actually gets included. Then there's the settlement of like, you've like had like 20 minutes of Ethereum blocks built on top of it. And so you're like less likely to reorg, right?
Settlement is
so
just like a series of weight of realness.
Yeah. And so this is like an additional weight of like additional layer. Like if you think about like the chain of additional weights of settlement, you have like the fastest is like, it's been confirmed by the Flash Blocks builder. Mm-hmm. Then that's 250 milliseconds. Then you have, it's been, you know, included in the 1 second block from the sequencer that's read out of this builder. Then you have, shortly after that will be, it's been, you know, signed off on by the unit. It's been like, you know, validated by the Unichain Validation Network. That's mm-hmm. like the next layer. And I think that like, there's all sorts of different implementations. I think that we'll have more details on that coming out. So don't need to go like that deep on it right now, I'd say, or it's not worth going that deep, but like essentially, you know, people that want, you know, there will be like nodes validating the network, and people that don't want to just like depend on a sequencer, they have a higher, you know, certainty that it's now been included because the mm-hmm. validation network has confirmed because their nodes have run the transactions as well. And, you know, I'd say that like, you know, maybe that'll be used by bridges, maybe it'll be used by mm-hmm. centralized exchanges. And then you have the final layer of settlement, which is it's posted to Ethereum, after right. which you have all the other forms of Ethereum settlement, I imagine, which are like right. more Ethereum blocks have been built on top of it, more estate, right? And so it's just like another layer that can be used for faster bridging, for centralized exchange. It also like adds like a incentive to be a check and balance on the sequencer, mm-hmm. in that like, you know, these people, these nodes would detect bad behavior very quickly from the sequencer, which even that bad behavior is very limited. And then I'd say that even beyond that, like one thing that's very cool is that like, as we have this validation network that improves and evolves, as we have this builder that improves and evolves, it's possible that we're like squeezing the sequencer. And maybe you eventually collapse it and you just have like a decentralized sequencer by virtue of like a really good builder and a really good TE builder and a really good validation network. I don't know if that's optimal or not. It's possible that there's still a role for the sequencer that is very constrained. But the point is that we're like, you know, we're just trying to push forward and advance on the decentralization of L2s in this project. And this is sort of our approach to it, which we think is pretty unique. We're kind of just like, I don't know. I think that like people have talked about a lot of things, we're just trying to like do them and grind through them and see what works. And and kind of put in our best foot forward. So, yeah.
Okay, so there is a UNI token staking and fee mechanism. So fees are being collected by the Uniswap validation network, and then they're also being redistributed to a variety of stakeholders.
And that's important to, like, you know, have more people validating the network, right? Which will add increased, you know, economic security.
Right. Where do the fees for the Uniswap validation network come from? Like, how is that, like, quote unquote?
Well, it's just like priority things like you know, just like base fees and priority fees from the.
Oh, it's just the layer two chain fees.
Just like the layer two chain fees.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some split across like Sequencer, validation network, et cetera. But that will all be like, I think some of it's already public, but that will all be documented, et cetera.
Okay, so like the Uniswap validation network receives the chain fees of UniChain and it sends it out to some portion goes to the Sequencer, some portion, I believe, goes to the Optimism Collective because you guys are part of the superchain. That's just how that works. And then some portion goes to the Uni token stakers.
Yeah, I mean, it's split out at the like, yes, there's like a split out.
Cool. Okay. Neat. So this is kind of like a way for, you know, the UNI token holder community to like get involved with like the management and operation of the chain.
It's a way for them to provide additional, you know, security to UniChain and additional transparent and additional kind of validation of UniChain. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. All right. So that's the Uniswap validation network. We've talked about native interop. We've talked about the Flashbots block building. What is left to talk about with UniChain? It's launching today. So that's that very important detail. What should people, now that they have this information, what should they go do? What links should we send them to? Like what are kind of the next steps for the rollout of the UniChain?
Yeah. So look, this is day one. I expect I think that, you know, there's going to be all sorts of things. I'm very excited to see what people do with it in some ways. Like it is, you know, it is a decentralized blockchain. People can deploy permissionless smart contracts to it. So like, you know, will someone do unicorn with hat? I don't know. Like people, you know, there's going to be all sorts of random things happening, I'd say, or exciting things. We also are going to have like all sorts of, tier one projects begin building on top of it. You know, things like, again, like native USDC.
Like what kind of run projects? Can you do those?
There's an entire site section of our website that has like that we'll be updating and is live right now that people can look at. I don't know if I've been naming names off the top of my head.
What's the UniChain website?
Just unichain.org. And that it will be as of the launch. Oh, this is slightly pre-recorded. It's leak, but as of the launch, it will be updated with an entire section that shows some of the initial projects that are already launched on it or launching on it.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'd say day one, people can bridge into UniChain. They can try trading on it. They can access anything built on top of it. They can start designing Mevaware, or they can start thinking about again. This won't be day one, I would say that this is like just like day one is like just the beginning, right? We're like in the early stages. So like, I think part of it is just like, beginning building, preparing for a world where we have flash blocks, where we have the UniChain validation network, where we have, interop, which is all, in my mind, definitely all coming this year. Right. And so, I think that like, and again, we'll be rolled out like one by one. Right. And so, I think that part of it will be like thinking about those things, thinking about Uniswap V4s, thinking about Uniswap V4 hooks. Day one, Uniswap V2, V3, V4 will all be deployed to UniChain as well. It will be working in our products at Uniswap Labs. So you'll be able to, create liquidity pools on top of Uniswap V4 using hooks, et cetera. That will all be there day one. But then you can start thinking about like how to like, what this chain is going to be and how to kind of, make use of its unique benefits, which I think is like maybe the most exciting thing. And I think that ecosystem will just be evolving over the coming months to year.
Something that I have picked up on as a pattern is things that start off as apps that then develop into the evolve into developer platforms. So, Uniswap V1, V2, and V3, I would all call those applications. Those are all applications. Uniswap V4, with the introduction of hooks, is turning Uniswap into a developer ecosystem, kind of like not really with an app store because there's no app store here, but like hooks are apps for Uniswap. And now hooks can be developed by, there are teams that are building, taking in funding and growing a team to produce a product that product is a Uniswap hook. And so now there's a developer ecosystem on Uniswap V4. And that same idea extends into the existence of Unichain as a platform as a whole. Maybe, Hayden, we can just zoom all the way back out and just talk about the trend of Uniswap turning into a developer ecosystem.
Yeah, and by the way, I will say that Uniswap in some ways has always been, like, I think of it almost like going from, like, Bitcoin to Ethereum or something. Like, Bitcoin is also a developer. You can build applications on top of Bitcoin. You have Bitcoin script, et cetera. But Ethereum is just much more expressive. And so you could certainly build applications on top of V3 and V2, but they just weren't very expressive because you couldn't modify the pool logic. You had to, like, kind of interact with the pool logic. It was just, like, much more constrained. And so I think that, like, for me, it was kind of, like, in some ways was maybe an obvious evolution, but times it didn't always feel obvious. Like, there's a lot of I think, like, a really interesting kind of complex challenge is, like, the trade-off space between liquidity fragmentation and hook and pool innovation, where, like, there's almost like a zero, like the more you know liquidity is fragmented, like, the more, like, the problem is, like, if you have, like, only one, you know, only one AMM, right? All the liquidity is in one place. You actually have, like, very unfragmented liquidity, which allows for very, like, efficient. You don't have to think about this, like, really insane sprawl of insanely complex routing. And, like, liquidity isn't fragmented across a million things that ultimately incurs costs to access. But you also, like, don't have the level of innovation and that, you know, you only have one design and it doesn't give you the expressiveness in the innovation. So I think early on with V2, V3, we took, like, these, like, stance of, like, very opinionated designs. Like, what is the best thing you can do in a single design? V1 as well. And I think that they took us very, very far. And I think that, like, the concern about things like hooks earlier on would have been, like, okay, but, like, now there's, a, like, this insane fragmentation. How do we handle it within our routing? How do we handle it within our UI? How do we handle it, you know, how does that not lead to just crazy liquidity fragmentation that no one can grapple with? But I think that, like, what we saw ended up happening is that people just took that, like, innovations that they wanted to do and took it outside the Uniswap ecosystem and were even less standardized, right? It was like, it's like, you know, people were, like, people that were innovating were just doing competing AMMs, essentially. Right. And that wasn't really a good status quo because that actually means that, like, the interfaces were less standardized. There was, like, even worse, like, fragmentation and gas costs. And people are, in some ways, like, sometimes people would, like, build a new custom wonky AMM and then, like, it gets hacked and then people are like, shit, my AMM got hacked. And, like, that's unfortunate, right? And so we wanted to figure out how can we lend our, like, security mindset, our, like, code quality, our, like, and reduce fragmentation while still allowing open innovation. And so that's where we landed on, like, Uniswap V4's design, which allows you to create very, very customizable pools, but the liquidity all sits within a single contract. We have, like, a lot of security mindset that went into making that a secure thing or what we feel to be very secure or and what has been very well audited at this point, at least. And then we've also kind of, like, using hooks, we've kind of allowed, like, a lot of the core logic, AMM logic to be shared, a lot of the interfaces to be shared, but allow, like, specific points to inject customized logic such that even when you're thinking about the security of a pool built on top of it, you can think about what hooks are being used. It constrains the area of which you need to audit and think about risks from. Like, as an example, if the only hook that's being used is, like, the custom fee hook, then, like, you know that the worst thing that can happen is, like, the fee can be modified, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if your only thing you're using is the swap hook, you know that it can't modify the liquidity provision portion of it. Like, there's, like, different, you know, constraints you could put on how you're modifying that allows you to have, like, to build, and that what that allows us to do is much more quickly, like, you know, you have this, like, aggregation problem. It's very hard to aggregate every liquidity protocol. And if you do everything, you might end up aggregating something unsafe, and then your users might lose money.
Right.
With hooks, we can, like, massively constrain this mindset. And so, like, as an example, like, that project Solange I mentioned, like, they launched their custom hook. They do some kind of semi-wonky things custom niche, right? Like, different from what we do in, like, the standard pools. But, you know, we've done some initial looks at it and we think it's, like, not too hard for us to route through it because you can still just call, like, the swap function in the pool manager and it still works. We just have to, like, think about the slippage tolerance we set because it's, like, slightly effective. So, like, it allows us to, like, and that's, like, some custom logic that, like, in the past would have had to be, like, an entirely competing AMM. And, you know, so they don't have to build an entirely competing AMM. We don't have to, like, think, like, aggregate an entire competing AMM. We're instead, you know, able to just, you know, so it, like, constrains.
It's, like, it's like a trade agreement. You guys have, yeah, like, a constrained conduit of trade between the Uniswap at the AMM and Flaunch, the hook. And, like, because you guys have constrained things to these, like, more narrow pathways, like, you can just trust each other better.
I think that, like, you know, trade agreement like has various like implications
sure.
to it.
So I'll break down pretty quickly.
I hear your metaphor, but yeah, the main thing is that like it allows, you know, there's like a positive sum thing
right.
here,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is like Flaunch actually benefits from co-locating their liquidity with all the other USDC for liquidity, which means that you can like do very cheap, efficient routing between them. They also don't have, like they can like do less work in terms of like building an AMM. They can kind of like, you know, and they get like a very cool platform. They even maybe get some in, and then we get the benefit of like, we don't like, there's no single best. I think that I'm fully pilled on the fact that I used to think maybe there was just like an optimal implementation of AMMs and that we could achieve it. And V3 was like a really good shot at that, I'd say. I think that like I've concluded that there is no optimal implementation and that the only solution is customizability. And I think that there may be like, I don't know like how many hooks will be like super popular or not. I think we've already seen like a good amount of them being developed. I think that like, you know, hooks that minimize MEV extracted on top of Unichain, you know, priority ordering is like a really meaningful hook on its own, right? That could like massively boost LP profits because they're not losing as much money. And so like, yeah, I think that like it's, you know, I think that there's a lot of very meaningful hooks. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
So Hayden, I want you to do this hypothetical with me. You, Hayden Adams, CEO of Uniswap Labs, fires yourself and or just challenges yourself to go build a hook. Like your next task, you're fired from Uniswap, you're fired from the CEO of Uniswap. Now you have to go build a hook on Uniswap V4. What hook would you build? Or what hooks would you like developers to build? Is like maybe an easier way to ask that question.
Okay, there's a lot of, I think that like, there's a bunch of categories that I'll shout out, and they're all kind of interesting to me. Like definitely like the token issuance ones are really interesting ways to like bootstrap liquidity essentially. And we already are seeing some of those. I think that like the one of my favorite ones is like the dumb. It's just like Uniswap V2 on top of Uniswap V4. It's kind of funny, but like Uniswap V2 is still like the highest TVL version of Uniswap. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really good benefits of V2, and it's like ultra dead simple. You don't have to like have any brain power in some ways to use it. And then beyond that, there's like fee compounding that's still hard to do in V3. So even full range V3 mm-hmm. doesn't have the fungibility or fee compounding of V2. But I think that what you could actually do on top of V4 is you could literally create a hook that has the exact same interface as V2, like the exact same like the exact same logic, has all the same auto compounding fees, fungible liquidity, and has lower gas costs than V2.
Oh, interesting.
And so V2 on V4 can actually be identical to V2, but better. You can do better V2. And I know that's kind of a funny one to say, but I think like a better V2, but even like, or even like, boot, but like a better V2 with liquidity bootstrapping is like pretty sick. I think that beyond that, like you could do, I think definitely this like priority ordering stuff is pretty interesting.
Do you think if somebody builds a V2 hook on Uniswap V4 that it would actually migrate some of the old liquidity from actual Uniswap V2 into the hook version of Uniswap V2? Or do you think that, why do you think the Uniswap V2 liquidity is so sticky?
It's so sticky because one, there's a lot of infra that's been built that was built around V2 for like deploying and incentivizing. Like the fungibility and fee compounding of V2 is just like a pretty good thing for you know, projects that only want full range liquidity, which it seems like a lot of like long tail tokens, that's like a very dead simple way for them to do it. So I think that like, you know, and then there's like infra built around that. There's like token launchers that launch V2 pools, and there's like, you know, whatever. There's like liquidity locking mechanisms that like you know, whatever. There's all these different mechanisms and things people have built on V2, and they like people are continuing to use those products even as V3 has existed. Mm-hmm. But I think that V4, you could truly do a much better version of V2, which to me is pretty exciting. Other hooks, by the way, I would do like, so yeah, there's all sorts of priority ordering stuff I think is interesting. All sorts of fee designs that are pretty interesting. There's companies like Sorella, et cetera, that are doing some stuff like that.
Sorella, I think, is making the hook that is like on the main quest line of Uniswap itself. Because like one of the big things that plagues Uniswap is LVR, impermanent loss, just MEV extraction from Uniswap LPs. So I think if there was any hook that would ever be created by like Uniswap, the team, it would be the one that Sorella is building that just so happens to be built by a third-party team.
I mean, I have a lot of hooks I want to build, but you know, that's definitely an interesting one for sure. Let's see. I think another. I don't know. I think like everyone in these days, I'm a little AI obsessed. I think that there's probably a convergence of TEEs plus AI plus hooks that are kind of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the exact thing there, but my curiosity there is interesting. I'm curious what people will do there. I'm nerd sniped a bit there. Let's see. I'm probably forgetting ones. I think that there's pretty good, like, you can definitely do, like, things like purpose as a hook. You can definitely do things like, lending as a hook. Like, you can do, like, a lot of, like, DeFi primitives and protocols within hooks, I think, are interesting. Or even, like, natively, like, do your liquidation.
As a hook?
Yeah, like, potentially. Or, like, portions of those systems. Like, maybe the liquidations are done through the form of a custom hook pool. Like, but I think there's, like, a lot of really... I think there's also, like, efficiency and, like the, some of the, like, using LP, like, using liquidity as a collateral as part of the system as a hook, which is pretty interesting. And I think that, like, you could do it in ways that, like, you know, things automatically... Yeah, you can just kind of like combine these DeFi primitives, like the kind of money Lego stuff that people used to talk about more. I think there's a lot there as well.
How is Uniswap, either Uniswap Labs or Uniswap Foundation, what is the effort here to like foster this ecosystem? Yeah. Are there like hook hackathons? Like what's going on here? Are you guys doing something in ETH Denver?
So that's a great question. I will delineate the roles here because like Uniswap Labs, we've been building this core protocol and we've been launching it. And I think that like we're thinking about within our products, how do we support hooks? How do we make sure we can route through as many hooks as possible in our front end, right? Stuff like that. And I think sometimes we'll be like a technical resource, just like, you know, through our own technical expertise to people that are building hooks. And we also, I guess, have, you know, Swap Labs Ventures, which we can invest in projects, including hook projects, but also all of crypto. But then that actually went dark for a while. We have reactivated it. So Uniswap Ventures is a thing now if people want to reach out. Yes. But then Uniswap Foundation is really leading the charge here in terms of directly working with, you know, this ecosystem of hook builders. So there's, you know, like a hook registry. There's a hook. There's all these things that they've been doing to try to like help. They have like, you know, giving grants to hook builders, providing, I believe there's stuff around like even helping hook builders get audits and funding audits, having like sort of standard like, you know, GitHub repos with all the pools that have been audited. Like the foundation is doing a lot of really cool stuff. I actually wish I knew it all off the top of my head. In some ways, you know, the people always think that we're like one entity, but like the actual separation means I literally don't actually know the latest on what they're doing. So we catch up sometimes, but they have like, this is like a big part of their mission right now is supporting hook builders. And so that's really been their domain. Could even make sense for you guys to have like the foundation team on it for a whole episode.
Yeah. A hook episode.
Yeah. A hook episode with the foundation team would be great.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, it's been great to have you on and help. Thank you for walking me through all of this. It's pretty exciting. I'm very excited to see what the native interop can do when that rubber meets the pavement. And now I'm going to go play around on some hooks. So thank you for joining me on the show today.
Yeah. Use Unichain, launch some hooks, do stuff. We're building away. So.
Cheers. Bankless Nation.
Thanks for having me.
You guys know the deal. Crypto is risky. Hooks, they're brand new, so they're also risky. You can lose what you put in. But nonetheless, we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.